Back in 1974, I went to Calvary Bible School for a couple terms there. And then, if you are familiar with Calvary Bible School, the ones during the three-week term, they'll have the boys separate with the teachers, and they have the ladies separate with the teachers. And one of the overarching, then they kind of bring the overarching struggle or trial back to the public or to the main auditorium. And the number one overarching reason that girls were struggling was they have a fine Christian father, but he doesn't have time for me. Last night when we were looking at these papers, and I appreciate everyone that filled one out, and if you didn't, I told you didn't need to, so it's not that I feel guilty or want you to feel guilty. So of the red copies, or of you ladies or sisters, we had, I think, 63 come in, so that's two-thirds of what was here. 80% of you said all was good. 10%, my husband is busy and doesn't have much time for me. 2% said my husband is inconsiderate of my feelings. And 12% said my husband doesn't understand me or listen well when I try to explain myself. And 5% said I feel compared. I can never be as good as his first wife. Of the men, over 90% said that all is well. So that means maybe we're not getting it. Maybe we're not getting it. 2% of you men said, I feel disrespected or unappreciated. 2% said, I wish my wife would take more time to do things with me. 3% said, my wife is often critical of me. So even though we want this weekend to be an encouragement, I think it can be. Corrective criticism is always good for the soul. So we have our work cut out. We have a job in front of us. And maybe, I think that's what one of the blessings was that Beth and I have, is the children are gone, the pressures are gone, the house is paid. We can sit back and enjoy life a little more. You don't have to watch every penny. You know, don't have to struggle to see whether the payment can be made. And so I've cut back in hours at work. I decided if I'm going to have the opportunity to get married again, I'm going to love it because I'm not going to get any younger. We don't have 40, 50 years ahead of us like we did the first time I got married. You know how it was when you first got married. Life was just, you just expected the next 60 years or 70 years or whatever was going to be there. Now we realize it doesn't always. And so we have an opportunity, and I don't want that to slip away from me. In fact, we were talking the other day, maybe I should even cut back, or sometimes I think, well, I should quit. I remember when, thinking as a grandpa, I'd like to take my grandchildren fishing or something. Their dad's busy, you know, he's got the same obligations that we had 30 years ago, and just things like that. And so I was thinking of that, and then going into the topic this morning, we'll have to see if we can get our seatbelts on, take off like an airplane, because it's going to go. In 1 Peter 3:7, we looked at that a little bit yesterday, and it said, likewise, ye husbands. Now, it says likewise, so he's making a point. He's trying, remember the first part of chapter 3, he's saying that women, the wives are to be subject to their husbands, but he's saying here, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the weaker vessel as being heirs together of the grace of life. And so, husbands, are we loving our wives? Remember that it's your prayers be not hindered, it says. And so what I think that means in looking at different commentators and that is that when there's something between Beth and I or your wife and you, you probably aren't going to sit there hand in hand or kneel beside your bed and pray openly and audibly for each other the way you would if everything was hunky-dory or, you know what I mean, when everything's going really good. And so that's, I think, the prayers that's being hindered because there's nothing more special to me than to hear my wife pray for me. She did this morning before we came down here. She said, I'd just like to pray for you. That means more to me than Dave praying for me. And Dave loves to, he wants to pray for you. He did pray for me this morning down in the room. And so I think when we as husbands need to sit down and set and realize that somewhere we're not getting all of our ducks in a row. And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm not criticizing anyone. I've been there. Here just not too long ago, Beth made a comment, and I thought I understood what she meant. I was saying something about slowing down, cutting back. She said, well, that'll affect our traveling. And I thought, well, she's meaning I shouldn't slow down. I shouldn't cut back and work less hours. No, she was just saying we're going to have to watch a little more what we do. And so, you know, we have that opportunity to share together and to be together, because he says, likewise, dwell with them or reside together. And I don't know what about you, but I would rather be, there's no place I'd rather be than with her on this side of eternity. Yes, I love my children. I love them dearly. But this is in a different situation. And he says, an honor or to esteem of the highest degree and dignity and honor and praise. And so he goes on in 1 Peter 3 there in verse 8, he says, finally, be ye all of one mind. And I think most times us men like to take these scriptures like we were seeing there in Ephesians 5 and put them in a church setting. And that's right. They do apply for us as brotherhood, sharing with each other and loving each other and being kind and considerate of each other. But I think it also refers to this auditorium, this audience here this morning. He goes on in verse 9. 8 and says, finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous. None of us men are going to tell my wife, or you're not going to tell your wife, wait, you don't have to heat up the food. I like cold food. You don't have to make the bed. You know, I can just sleep in the couch. No, we like that. We like those kind, courteous, and those things that our wives do for us. He says in verse 9, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrarywise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life, now get this, and that's you and I here this morning. He that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. And so when we think of that, he says, be pitiful. That means to be sympathetic or tenderhearted, be courteous, be kind and friendly. Then he says, refrain, or that means stop or quit. You know, sometimes when the children just on and on and on, and you say, now stop. Everybody stop. We're going to stop this. This isn't going to go on. And you set the tone that, you know, we're not going to keep bickering and biting and on, just on and on and on and on. Because, you know, pretty soon the one boy said, well, you're a big cow. And the other, well, you're a big fat cow. And so in other words, the story just, you got to get over the top yet. And so finally it gets clear out of proportion. Sad to say, sometimes us grandpas even can do that in our marriages sometimes. Like, once someone, that button is pushed, because he says, and eschew evil, that means to decline from or deviate from it. Remember the golden rule last night yesterday we looked at in Matthew 7:12. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do even so to them. I don't want my wife hollering at me. I don't want my wife bickering with me. I don't think you do either. And I don't think they want us to do that with them. And so when we think of loving our wives, men, the word love in the dictionary means an intense feeling of deep affection. Second meaning is a great interest and pleasure in someone or something. You know, someone can say, I just love my roses, or I just love my tractors. You know, that's a different love than what we are talking about when we talk about our spouse. Then he says in the fourth point is, it's a choice. I think that's where the battle is. Same as anger. Anger is a choice. You ever been angry with someone and the phone rings and, oh, good morning, good to see you. All of a sudden, it's a complete different voice tone, complete different person. You're like, wait a minute, I thought he was just angry at me. Anger is a choice. Anger is a control. That's why children or people get angry. I remember a job that I had that this one man, if he went into a rage, everybody would just back off. Let him go. We even would do his work for him. He's on a production line. We'd even do his work for him so that the units could go on down the line, but nobody would say anything. Because anger is a control. That's why we get angry. That's our natural reflex in stopping. When someone gets, you know, just goes ballistic, everybody, I'll go do something else and let him calm down. You might think he's stupid and childish, but you're not going to entangle with him. Remember, Proverbs says, only by pride cometh contention. Proverbs 13:10. So, the next time, it may not be your husband or your wife, but men, next time you're somewhere and you see something going on or there's a tiff between someone, remember, one or the other is proud. Because that's why we argue. I'm not willing to back down. I'm convinced I'm right. I know I'm right, and I always have been right. That's why 60, and I told you yesterday, 60 to 65% of second marriages, and this is for widowers, but it's not necessarily contained to Anabaptists or Mennonites. I'm saying in general, when widowers remarry, 60 to 65% end up in divorce. Here's the three reasons that it gave. Feeling compared. And that was one of the percentages that I read. Now, this is male or female. This statistic isn't gender related. The other one was financial resources, how to blend your money or not to blend it. And number three is not properly grieving. And when I don't properly grieve, that's when I think she's going to feel compared. Because I'm still holding a vigil, or whatever you want to call it, for my first wife. So husbands, our wives need to feel loved. Some of you that are older like I am, or even in my dad's generation, there was a man named Andy Carnegie, I think is his name, had written a book, and I forget the title of his book, but he was one that was all into meeting the emotional needs of people. And he says if you compliment someone often enough, you don't have to fire him. Now, maybe you never found yourself there where you think, well, if I actually compliment her, I'm going to be going against my conscience, because I don't think that's honest. There is something good in everyone. A man can be a murderer, and he can hold the door open for you at Walmart, and you don't know what he just did wherever. All of us have the potential to do good. Doesn't mean I'm a good person, but we can do good acts. And so all of us have done something well enough that I can say, thank you, that was great. Or you did a good job with that. Remember, husbands, the feeling loved is spelled communicating. That was one of the things that was in that comments, was I don't feel understood. Now, us as men are geared to fixing, right? Somebody starts complaining about, now wait, okay, the problem is, and we fix the problem, right? So now we can go out and do our work. No, my first wife used to say, and I told Beth the same thing, she used to say, now wait, just let me talk. You don't need to answer. You don't need to fix the problem. That's not what I'm asking you. I just wanted to get it out. Then I'll feel better once it's out, and then we can decide what to do. So here's our nature, men. When we feel threatened, what do? We stonewall. Because men in general don't like confrontation. And especially if you've been through some hard times in life, especially if it's church related or something like that, the last thing you want is confrontation. And we've learned to stonewall. Well, we'll say, well, that's interesting. And we go out and we finish our chores, or we start another project, or we do something else. But when we stonewall our wives, she will feel unloved because she doesn't feel heard. And when she doesn't feel heard, she's going to think, he doesn't care about me. That may not be your intent. You just don't like differences. So when she becomes frustrated, she's going to say, when can we talk? And that's the word we hate. Because we know it's more than just telling you, I love you. So she feels compelled to get your attention. So how is she going to get your attention? She's going to raise her voice, or she's going to be more persistent. Exactly what pushes our buttons. And we don't like our button being pushed. But remember, men, it's our job to keep love in the marriage. God created our wives as a helpmeet, as a weaker vessel. So how do we keep joy in our marriage? We listen. We affirm her of your love. You ask, did I do or say something that hurt you? If you remember early on, I said that that's one thing Beth and I have decided to do before, as we go to bed. We'll never go to bed knowing that something doesn't feel quite right. But when you say it that way, when you say, what have I done to hurt you? You've opened up the gate for her to tell you. Now remember this. This is the hardest thing for us men to do. But when someone tells you something, and it may be the man at the feed store or the lady at the feed store, it may be the guy coming to your shop, Tom. But when someone gives you, he says, well, I'm just so afraid of everything, or okay, let's keep it in our marriage. And your wife says something, don't say, well, that was a dumb idea. But say, how does that make you feel? When you answer with a question, you keep the heart open. She feels like he's listening. When you answer with a statement, you close the heart. She's saying, well, he doesn't care. And she's going to say, well, I don't know why I felt that way. It's probably just a whim. No, there's a reason. Keep the door open. Be quick to say, I'm sorry. I'd ask, just please forgive me. I just need your forgiveness. Because Christ gave all of us a second chance. That's why we're here today in our marriages. And I think all of us, we agreed yesterday, that we made some resolutions that this was going to be, we're going to put the right foot forward. And we're not going to try and make the same mistakes we made the other time. We're not going to hope that the pain goes away and we can just finally sometime. I remember one time, it was early on in my first marriage, there was something there, and I just hoped, well, eventually it'd go away. And you know, eventually it did. Or I thought so. Until we got into a conversation later and I found out, no, she just quit talking about it. The pain was still there. The hurt was still there. Christ gave us unconditional love. Remember what we've seen in Ephesians 5? He died so, he loved us so much that he died for us. And why would we as husbands do any less for our wives if we really, truly, honestly say that's the best gift God has given me outside of salvation? Because in Ephesians 4:32 it says, be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. So there are 6 steps I'd like to go over for us men to consider. 6 things that, this isn't original with me, it's out of a book of Love and Respect, and that's where the title comes from. You can find the book and buy it. But the step number 1 is closeness. And here's 4 points that I wrote down that it means. Go walking. Hold hands. Do special things together. One thing that we did, my first wife and I, she couldn't work very much physically, but we enjoyed antiquing together. Not that we bought a lot, we just enjoyed, she collected a certain dish. And that's not best thing that she really enjoys. But you know what? We've been going antiquing because she wants to be with me. Do we buy a lot? No, I just like to see what's out there. I just like to see, you know, just a way of being together. And she wants to honor me and do that with me. Go out of your way to do something special for her. I think Brother Virgil said we need to take her out and spend $100 for a meal. Probably most of us kind of cringed with that because we're a little tight with our money, especially when it comes to eating out. Number 2 is openness. Ask about her day. Put a smile on your face when you come home. Give her your full attention when talking. Now, for maybe the older generation, it's not that. But for us younger, well, I still consider myself younger. But I may be there, you know, doing this while she's getting supper ready. And she's saying sometimes, saying, huh? Yeah. Okay. Supper ready? I haven't engaged in a conversation. I've answered her questions, but she knows I wasn't listening. Put your phone down. Put the paper down. Even a good periodical, maybe your readings, whatever that came in the mail that day. Give her your undivided attention. Pray for and with her. I told you yesterday, there's nothing I enjoy more than to hear my wife pray for me for me to pray for her audibly. Because what you are doing is you are telling God what you love about her. What has meant something to you that she did for you today. It may be the simplest thing, and well, for you women, it may not. It may be for us men. It may be the supper or the cup of coffee, or it may be whatever you've done that's really kind of mediocre or repetitious. It doesn't have to be something new and outlandish. Step number 3 is understanding. Listen and repeat what you think she said. If I'd have done that the other day about Beth saying about us slowing down, I would have got the point. She wasn't saying, well, we need the money. That's not what she meant. She just was making the point that we'll have to watch how we spend our money. But to me, being a feeler, and I don't know if you've ever thought about that, everybody's either is a feeler or a thinker or a good mix of that. Most people are a real good mix of that. Your strong thinkers or your presidents, your CEOs, your people that have no problem coming and having a meeting like this and saying, well, we're going to have a 50% layoff. You know, production has slowed down. We have to get rid of half of you. And to go home and eat supper and not worry about how the rest of you are going to make your bills. But a feeler would just be catastrophic. I'd say, I can't lay off 50 people. There's no way, because they're going to have to go home and tell their wife, and their wife's going to cry, and they're going to not have money to pay their bills. And a feeler can't take that. But a feeler will also assume what's not really there, and that's what happened in our situation. I'm a feeler. And so when someone makes a comment, I automatically think I know what was said, but it's not that always. So give them the benefit of the doubt. Step number four, be a peacemaker. Let her vent. Let her vent. I mean, she may have hard days too. We do, and we think it's okay. Let her vent. And don't become angry, but be quick to say, I'm sorry, if it's about you. Be quick to say, I'm sorry. Have a date. We've heard that before. Assure her of your love for her and mean it. And I'm not trying to be romantic when I say that, but you all know in a voice tone whether someone's just saying something or whether the voice tone is reflecting that it means it. Step number five is loyalty. Never correct her in public. I don't like it. I don't think us men like it. When our wife says, no, that's not how it was. You've got it all wrong. And she'll take and say, and you feel like, where can I go hide? Never correct her in public. If it actually needs correcting, do it in private, because then she can accept it. Make her and your marriage a priority. Defend her. Just recently, while we were in Belize, we kind of had a contentious time with an older single lady there that's kind of hard to please anyhow, and she started railing up. Well, that's a Belizean term. She started railing up with Beth, and I said, wait, you don't talk to my wife like that. I love her, and I'm going to protect her. If you have a problem, you talk to me. I'll take care of it. Defend your wife. Don't let someone run over her. Here's one that's a little harder for us men to do because we think we can justify it, but that is keep your commitments. If you tell your wife you're going to be home at 5 o'clock, be home at 5 o'clock. Now, she'll understand an emergency. We all have emergencies. But keep your commitments, or tell her where you're going. And esteem her very highly. Step number six, tell her you're proud of her and her accomplishments. You take a little child and you give him a compliment and he's got the world by the tail because someone believes in him. Speak highly of her to others. You know, I just don't deserve my wife. God has given me such a blessing. She's such a wonderful, sweet woman. She really wants to make me happy. She just does such an awesome job. Open the door for her. As a boy growing up, my dad always opened the door for mom. I did that in my first marriage. We do it now. I even had someone tell me, we went to the window to watch to see whether you opened the door for her. Because we knew you did it for your first wife. Make her feel like she's number one. More important than our cabinet shop or farm or business or anything else that we have. Because that's why we're here this morning. There would have been a time we'd have given it all to have her back.